Okay, Chevra, Pesach is coming up. Last week we began going through some of the halachos of the Seder. I think last week we went from Kadesh through Yachatz. So if you remember the song Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, after Yachatz comes basically what takes the next couple of hours, which is called Magid. Right? Magid is the big part of the Seder. Magid is the mitzvah of being Mesaper B'tzias Mitzrayim. The Rambam tells us that there's a mitzvah to be Mesaper B'tzias Mitzrayim, just like there's a mitzvah to remember the Shabbos, like it says, Zohar Yom HaShabbos Akadsho. Rav Salavitcher, just a comment. The idea of the Rambam is that just like the mitzvah of remembering Shabbos is to note the differences between Shabbos and all the other days of the week. For example, that's part of the mitzvah of Kiddush. Havdalah also notes the difference between Shabbos and all the days of the week. So also the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim involves noting the differences between between the night of Yetzias Mitzrayim and all other nights. Hence, the Manish Tana fits into place. Manish Tana, according to this explanation, is not really a series of questions. Rather, Manish Tana is a series of statements. It's statements that mark the differences between this night and all other nights. Of course, the classical understanding of Manish Tana is that it's questions that the Kan HaBein Shoel. Interestingly, too bad Frida isn't here, because Frida might like this point. Too bad the Mishnah says Kan HaBein Shoel. The Mishnah does not speak about Habas Shoelis. Right? It's interesting that it's only the son who's asking the question. The daughter is not asking the questions. It happens in some of the later Svarim, in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, etc. They write that the daughter asks. I think this is our standard practice. It's interesting that the Mishnah does not say that, even though the mitzvah Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim clearly applies to men and women as well. In the Pius for Shabbos Haggadah that Rabbi Yosef Tuv Elem wrote, there's a line that begins with the letter Samach, Sachu Shadosh and Sichos Amtsa, B'chol Mili de Pisca B'lo Shemtsa, Afa Pi Shemitzis Esei Shazman Greba Bon Lo Nitzah, Ko She Yeshon Baal Techo Chametz, Yeshon B'chol Mechol Matza. Rabbi Yosef Tuv Elem in that Pius writes, Sachu Shadosh and Sichos Amtsa, that women have to be very strong to tell the story of leaving Mitzias Mitzrayim, even though it's Mitzias Esei Shazman Grema, but it's connected to Matzah. The idea of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim connected to Matzah is that just like women are obligated in Matzah, women are also obligated in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So women are obligated in Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. Nonetheless, somehow the Mishnah does not mention that the girls ask the question, although, as a matter of halacha, obviously, they do. Now, the Rambam's understanding is that the Manish Tana are statements to mark that this night is different than all other nights. The idea that the Manish Tana is a question is well known. Nonetheless, it's interesting that Manish Tana is not done in the niggun of a question. You know, we have nigunim in Judaism. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba-ba going around in 180 degrees. That's the way you do a kasha. Manish Tana, right, is not really done with a kasha nigin. Maybe the traditional way is Manish Tana Laila Hazem, Mikal Halayla, Shebechal Halayla. It's more of a chant, no? It's not a kasha. Right? Like the. What?
Tata
leben vilach fregin their fear kashes fabusis nach from pesach anish when our necht for nagant yar. Right, it's not. It doesn't have the niggin of a kasha, and certainly manish tanah halayla hazeh does not have the niggin of a kasha. Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, when he conducted the seder, used to say that it would be better to have the niggin of a kasha. But nonetheless, because the kids in school learned the traditional tune, Reb Shlomo Zalman had them sing it, even the girls. And Reb Shlomo Zalman was not worried about Kobi Isha Erva, right? Modern orthodoxy, right? Reb Shlomo Zalman is not worried about Kobi Isha Erva. Even the girls would sing the Manish Tana. Now, it's very important that on the approach that Manish Tana is a series of questions, so you have to answer the questions, right? If the
kid is noticing that there are differences. And the kid notices that there are differences probably because you, after the karpas, which is kind of normal until that point, you take the table away, and the kid's like, hey, Dad, like, we didn't eat yet. The kid's going to ask questions. Well, if the kid asks questions, it's a responsibility to answer. And you have to make it clear that Avodim Hayinu Lefarah B'Mitzrayim is not just a story, but it's an answer. That because we were slaves to Paro, that's why all these things happened. If the kid is noticing the contradictions on the night, that is this a night of happiness or a night of sadness? Is there matzah or marah? And there are contradictions within each thing, like we could talk about, that the matzah is lechem only, on the other hand, the matzah is what we went out of Mitzrayim with. And the marah, although it's supposed to be very bitter, we don't use really bitter stuff for marah, we use lettuce, right? Which really is kind of sweet. Right? And if the kid is noticing all of the stiras, you have to answer it. In the old Maxwell House Haggadah, they begin the types, the translation of Avodim Hayinu, as saying, because we were slaves, you have to answer the kasha. You have to make sure that the kids ask questions and you answer it. It's a big mistake if we focus just on the text of the Haggadah. What we are really supposed to be doing is saying, okay, here are the questions, now what are the answers? Now, it happens that some of the questions aren't really questions that have answers. What's the answer to how come we dip twice? What's the answer to the karpas thing? There's no answer. You know why? Because it's not really a question. Because the karpas thing is there just to tell you, hey, it's different. Hey, dude, right? We're doing weird stuff for you to notice. Did I tell you this? My plan this year, don't tell my kids, is I'm thinking of dipping karpas in wine. Because the Mishnah Berurah writes that if you don't have salt water or vinegar, you can use wine. And like, if you want to do weird stuff for the kids to ask questions, do weird stuff.
And then you said, never mind.
I don't know.
Never
okay.
Mind. You didn't say that.
Fine. So the idea of Magid is to answer the questions to tell the story of leaving Yetzias Mitzrayim. A few years ago, someone asked me a question that she was working in the hospital on Leil HaSeder.
Yes.
I spoke about this in Shul, I think. Yes. She was working in the hospital Leil HaSeder, and she wasn't sure how much time she'd be able to get off to do a Seder. What is the shortest possible Seder that you can do? How long does the Seder have to take? So the answer is, I think I could pull off a Seder in 15 minutes. Maybe less. Right? You make Kiddush. Right? You make Kiddush. Honestly, you want to eat a little bit of karpas. Don't eat karpas. Whatever you want. Right? Magid. What do you have to do for Magid? What you have to do for Magid is you say Manishtana. Avodim Hayinu. What else you have to do for Magid? That's basically it. Rabbi Gamliel. Rabbi Gamliel used to say that Kol Shamar Shlosha Dvarim Elul Pesach Lo Yatza Yidei Chovaso. The Darkei Moshe over here, I give it on the sheets right before it says Rachza. Darkei Moshe quotes from the Ran that Lo Yatza Yidei Chovaso means that you don't get the mitzvah to the full extent. If you don't say Pesach Matzah Marer, you don't get the mitzvah like Hidr Mitzvah, like having the most beautiful Esrog, right? But you still get the mitzvah. So if you're really in a rush, you're in the hospital at night. By the way, Rav Shlomo Zalman also writes that if you're in the hospital at night and you decide to do a Seder while you're treating patients, you're not yosin a mitzvah, that's a mitzvah, blah, blah, blah. Focus on the patient! Don't focus. No, don't do that. Focus on the patient. That's like very important. No? So, Rabbi Gamliel is probably to be yotzei a mitzvah min hamovchar. For this reason, the Mishnah Berurah is very difficult. The Mishnah Berurah writes that you're supposed to call back the helpers at home to say, oh, Pesach Matzah Mar. Remember as kids, you used to like, wake up my grandmother. My grandmother used to like, doze off at the Seder table. I'm like, Nana, wake up. Pesach Matzah Mar. She said, Pesach Matzah Mar. Goes back to sleep. That's like the way it was. Like, it's probably not necessary. It's probably not necessary because you yotzei the mitzvah, without it. Now, part of the mitzvah of Sikur Yetzias Mitzrayim is you ask questions, you tell an answer that because we left Mitzrayim, that's why all these things happened. And you also have to say some degree of Shavach to Hashem, thank you to Hashem.
Right, so
the mitzvah of Sikur Yetzias Mitzrayim, Rashi writes, Lechem Sha'onim Olav Dvarav Harbe means
Haggadah and Hallel. That's Rashi. You have the Rashi Sha'unan all of the Varim. Rashi says Shagomrim all of is a Hallel, but Omrim all of Haggadah.
Hallel and Haggadah is the central. You need Hallel to be part of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim.
Do you need the second part?
Yeah, so the second part of Hallel, the second part of Hallel we'll talk about next week in Yer Zechem. The second part of Hallel, we divide the Hallel up, Leil HaSeder, because the first two paragraphs have to do with leaving Mitzrayim.
Right.
The end of Hallel is focused on La'asad Lavo, is focused on the future. Probably the Hallel that's part of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim are those first two chapters of Hallel. They are very important. The Dayenu is not really part of the Haggadah. The Rambam doesn't have it. The additional, how many plagues can you add up? That's also, if you want to do a quick Haggadah, you can knock it out. Chick-chack, boom. And by the way, and if you say a really quick Haggadah, the wine is still going to be cold by the time you get to the second cup. I find that like the first cup of wine is drinkable. Third and fourth cup of wine is drinkable because it's cold. The second cup of wine is like, whatever. Especially Seder wine, which tends to be full of lots of sugar and like tastes like molasses. Whatever. Okay. But that's another thing. I do recommend that you should drink wine that you like at the Seder. It's a bigger... Poskim say that you should have red wine at the Seder, not white wine, to be Zecher Ladam. Right? Yeah. That's also part of the contradictions that we spoke about beforehand. Wine is freedom, but also it reminds us of blood.
Yes.
Right? All of the things at the Seder have these conflicting messages. Life is complicated. Orthodox Jews are complicated. That's the idea of the Seder. But even though red wine is very important at the Seder, it's better to have wine that you like than yucky red wine. Get good wine.
How about rosés?
Rosés are probably good enough. Someone asked me today what wine to get for the Seder. So it happened someone gave me a wine a few months ago called Red Zinfandel. It's awesome. Red Zinfandel is really good. Those of you who are listening to this year, okay, this is my recommendation for the Seder. Get matzah that you like. Get wine that you like. That's really important. Magid is extremely important. The end of Magid is the bracha Asher Galanu V'Gasa V'Sem Mitzrayim. That probably is considered the bracha of Shehechiyanu at the Seder, or the bracha of Shehechiyanu, the bracha She'asa Nisim, I should say. It's considered the bracha She'asa Nisim that we say at the Seder. That bracha has to be connected to the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. You should be careful not to talk between the end of Hallel and the beginning of Asher Galanu. That should like flow right into it. I think at Shabbos Haggadah we'll speak about the bracha of Asher Ga'alanu more, so I don't want to talk about it so much now. So after Magid comes Rachtza.
Isn't Shehechiyahu included?
We say Shehechiyahu in the Kiddush, but there's a question about. Let me say it like this. There's a question: how come I don't make a bracha on the mitzvah Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? I tell the story of leaving Mitzrayim. How come I don't make a bracha on it? Most mitzvahs get a bracha. So the answer might be that sometimes I'm supposed to be so full of emotion that a bracha doesn't make sense. If I'm really emotional, I feel like I came out of Mitzrayim now. If I'm going to stop that moment and say, oh, I have to make a bracha, that's going to kill the whole thing. Right? The idea is that because it's the experience, so not reciting a bracha... not reciting a bracha makes more sense. Alternatively, there's an idea that sometimes I don't want to make a bracha because certain mitzvahs I do because I want to do them. A bracha means I'm doing because Hashem said so. How come there's no bracha on Kibud Av V'Em? So many poskim say, because I'm not supposed to do it just because God said so. I'm supposed to do it because it's the right thing to do. And I want to do it on my own. Right? So the idea of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is that I feel like I left Mitzrayim, and how can I make a bracha? Because it's so ingrained on me, like, I'm singing for joy, I'm jumping off the rooftops, I'm singing on the rooftops, whatever it is, because I'm so excited about Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. That
this is the reason why there's no bracha on the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael also.
You moved to Eretz Yisrael, you're at this high. How can you make a bracha? We came, we arrived.
Maybe it's not actually.
Okay, that's like a lundish approach. Maybe it's not a mitzvah, but like, you know, I mean, like, you have to get into it, and I think a bracha might not make sense. They quote these ideas from Shlomo Zalman. Okay, let's go on. So, after Magid comes Rachza. Rachza is you wash your hands with a bracha.
Yes.
Right? Now, Rav Schechter likes to say that, you know, the Tosfos in Pesachim discusses that usually we make a bracha before we do a mitzvah. The exception that we make a bracha after you do the mitzvah is when someone converts to Judaism. You can't make the bracha beforehand, you're not yet Jewish. They make the bracha after, right? That makes sense. Based on that, whenever you go to the mikvah, like when a woman goes to the mikvah for Nida, you make the bracha after, not before, because all tevilah is the same. Based on that, the Bali HaTaisa say, you know what, we make the bracha after we wash our hands, not before, because sometimes you can't make a bracha before you wash your hands because maybe your hands are dirty.
Yeah.
Right? It can be so dirty that you can't make a bracha.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why traditionally we make a bracha after we wash our hands, but in order to make it a little bit over lasiyasan, we make the bracha before we dry the hands. And drying is still part of the washing, because it cleans it off. Rav Schechter likes to say that the traditional psak of many Ashkenazi Rishonim is that they make the bracha v'al netilas yadayim before they wash their hands. Again, if you want to get the kids to like ask questions, it only works once, I have to admit. But what you do, Leal HaSeder, is you make the bracha before you wash your hands. They're like, Abba, what's going on? And then obviously you're not going to answer them until after because you just made the bracha. But doing things which are fully halakhic in order to pique people's curiosity, this is a night of chinuch. It's a night of education. Do stuff that's a little bit, you're like, you can have some fun in life. Right? There's nothing wrong with having fun.
There are a lot of Germans who wash their hands before Kiddush.
Right.
So
Leo HaSeder, no one washes their hands before Kiddush. Right? Even the Germans, Leo... Leo has said you wash your hands the same time as everyone else washes their hands. The difference is that the Germans have only the Seder leader washes their hands for Urchatz, and no one else does. Now, let's go on. So, Rachza is that you wash your hands and you make the bracha of Al Netilas Yadayim. There is a little bit of a problem because I washed my hands not so long ago before Karpas, and now I'm washing my hands again. So, why do I make a bracha? My hands are still clean.
Yeah.
Why did I make a bracha? My hands are still clean. If your hands are clean, you don't make a bracha. So Shlomo Zalman Orbach used to go out of his way to like scratch his head or something to show that, to make his hands dirty so that he could make a bracha for Rachza. The Shibboleh Haleket, the Bir Halacha quotes over here from the Shibboleh Haleket, it's about with page 1, going over to page 2. The Shibboleh Haleket says that you should try to make your hands dirty or try to obligate yourself in the Tilas Yadayim, he writes, "I am Mishnah Brim, because of Shibboleh Haleket, came a Shatali Atam Behesach Hadas, and Barlo Shishima Yadav Hatem, for Noga Bekisvei Akodesh, or Bishar Dvarim Hamatama Yadayim, Insach Lach Servali to Yadav." If you know that you didn't touch stuff that makes your hands tummy, or touch Kisvei Hakodesh, there's an interesting halacha that if you touch a Megillah, or you touch a cloth, a parchment, so then you have to wash your hands. The Mishnah Berurah earlier said maybe this halacha isn't quoted in the poskim, maybe it's not true, but then the later poskim say, no, it is quoted in the poskim. The Shibboleh Haleket that's here in the Mishnah Berurah in Taf Ayin Hey says that if you touch a cloth, you have to wash your hands.
Afterwards,
because it's metame yisayadayim. Now, the Gemara speaks about how touching parchment, remember, that part of the whole discussion about which svarim in Tanakh, the Mishnayis in Yadayim, which svarim in Tanakh became canonized? So the question about canonization is kind of Mishnayis in terms of which books make your hands tummy. Right? In the context of, if it makes my hands tummy, then I can't eat truma until I wash my hands.
Right.
The question is as to whether making your hands tummy is a halacha only in eating truma, whether it's a halacha in general, that if you touch a Megillah, that you have to wash your hands. That's a discussion. The Shibboleh Haleket paskins that if you touch a Megillah, you have to wash your hands. I'm actually thinking, don't tell my kids, I'm thinking of pulling that stunt this year, to just touch a Megillah after Magid, and that way you, like, hey, what do you have that Megillah Sester there for? Oh, I'll tell you why, so I can wash my hands. Like, huh? It's a teaching experience. It's like, it's a moment. I don't know, I'm weird. But let's go on. So after Rachza, We come to Motzi Matzah, right? Motzi Matzah is that we recite the bracha of Hamotzi, then we recite the bracha of Alachilas. Matzah, and that you have the trick in terms of which matzahs you hold, which matzah the bracha goes on, etc. That's the idea of Motzi Matzah. Now, many Rishonim, Rashi and Rashbam assume that the real mitzvah of matzah that I have is the matzah I eat at the end of the Seder, called the Afikomen.
Yeah.
That the matzah beforehand, the matzah that we eat at Motzi Matzah, is not the real mitzvah of matzah.
Yeah,
that's Rashi and the Rashbam. Other Rishonim assume it is the real mitzvah. Well, now, how come if it's not the real mitzvah of matzah, how can I make the bracha on the fake mitzvah of matzah? So the Bali Hatosa say it's really the same idea as what we have on Rosh Hashanah. On Rosh Hashanah, we have the Tekiyos de Miyushan, Tekiyos de Me'umar. Right? Right. The real Tekiyos are the Tekiyos in Me'ov Chazaras HaShanas. Those are the Tekiyos that you get the mitzvah with. The Tekiyos beforehand, the 30 sounds, that's just there to be Ma'arbi Vesasatan. You know, Satan is out there with his pitchforks and he's going to mix you up. So in order to confuse Satan, you blow like a few sounds at the beginning. Satan gets all confused. That's not the real mitzvah of Shofar. Nonetheless. Not you, it's me. Nonetheless, we make the bracha on the fake mitzvah Shofar in order, since we're doing it already, we make the bracha on the first time that we do the mitzvah. Here also with the matzah, we make the bracha on the first time that we eat the matzah, even though the real eating of matzah is not until later. This leads to one of the biggest chumras in Judaism, which is that you should not talk the entire Seder meal, no? Because my bracha, I don't talk between the tekiyos, right? Doesn't everyone in Shoah announce, do not make any noise, do not say Baruch Hu Baruch Shemo between the first sound and the tekiyos all the way at the end. So yeah. It's the same thing. So that means I should not talk my entire Seder. Wow. By the way, if you want the Seder to go quick, that's how you do it. But you don't talk. Now, generally speaking, this is not standard practice. People do talk. Probably because it's a chumrah. It's even a chumrah by Rosh Hashanah. By Rosh Hashanah, the rabbi wants to keep the congregants quiet. So that's why you announce not to talk. But Lamaisa, you are allowed to talk. It's a chumrah not to talk, etc. Yeah.
But isn't the mitzvah of blowing shofar on Rosh Hashanah only 30 blasts?
Right.
So
you already got the mitzvah before.
See, so the Tiket Mirushav is I would argue it's really the real one.
But the Gemara says that the Tekiyos de Miyushav over there just to confuse the Satan. The real mitzvah shofar is supposed to be the shofar that's connected to Malchus, Achronos, and Shofros. And therefore, we make the bracha even if it's not the real mitzvah. Similarly, the same thing could happen. Let's say you live in a community that you don't have many vegetables. And the only vegetable you have in your community is murr. Right? It's the only thing they have. So you're going to use murr for karkas. And then you're going to use murr again for murr. When do you make the bracha of alachilas murr? At the beginning. Why? Right? The real murr isn't until the end. Answer. Because this is the first time you're eating it. You make the bracha the first time you're eating it. It's the same basic idea.
Okay.
Now, when it comes to eating matzah, so the practice is that we eat two kezesim at the midst of alachilas matzah. Why do you eat two kezesim? So there are two different reasons that are given in poskim. One reason is that we're not sure which matzah to eat. Do you eat the top matzah, eat the middle matzah? So because I'm not sure which matzah to eat, I eat both.
Yeah.
Right? Another reason why you eat two kezesim of matzah, which Shechter has in his Sefer, is because it's really two separate mitzvos that we have Leil HaSeder. I have to eat a yontiv meal, like on any yontiv, and I have to eat a special mitzvah of matzah. And we have a principle of we have a principle that ein osim mitzvos chavilos chavilos, that I try not to do two mitzvos on the same item. So therefore, I have one mitzvah, one matzah for a Sudas Yontiv, another matzah for the mitzvah of eating matzah. Now, if Rav Schechter's reason is correct, so then everybody at the table should eat two matzahs, should eat two kezesim of matzah.
Wow.
Because everyone has an obligation to eat matzah and an obligation to have Sudas Yontiv. However, the more traditional reason that's found in Poskim, that we're not sure which matzah you're going to eat. So that doesn't make sense at the way we run the Seder. Because the way we run the Seder, the leader of the Seder has the matzahs in front of him. Everybody else is basically going to eat matzah from the box. If you're eating matzah from the box, so there's no question, top matzah, middle matzah, right? You're not eating top or middle, you're eating shatz or matzah from the box, right? So it doesn't matter. So Shlomo Zalman says, you know what? You should only eat one kezias. If you're the leader of the Seder, eat two. Everybody else eats one. According to Rav Schechter's rationale, I think everyone at the Seder should eat two kezaisim. How big is a kezaias? This is one of the great mysteries in Judaism. So it ain't nearly as big as you think it is. Or maybe it is exactly as big as you think of it. What's his name? Natan Slifkin has on his blog, Rationalist Judaism. He's like, this is a kezaias chart, an olive. This is an egg. This is an olive. It's not an ostrich egg. Now, here's the thing, okay? Olives in the United States are graded. Graded not like going to school, but graded that there are different sizes of olives. There's seven sizes. They go from small to super colossal. The middle size of olives, middle of seven, would be number four, right? So middle size of olives is called extra large. Fregnish kinkashas, that's what it is. Huh? Now, an extra large olive, again, so...
Is it like what is the distribution of
the so most of the olives that...
Right, like, you don't find, like...
So the
like there are, like, large eggs. You don't really find anything much smaller. You might occasionally...
No, with eggs also, there's some really small eggs that are generally used only in industry. They're tiny little eggs. There's a company called Pepetti Eggs that makes these, like, teeny tiny little eggs that, like, don't really develop. And those are things, like, when you go to Dunkin' Donuts, they give you eggs that come, like, from this egg liquid. The way they get that is they take these tiny eggs that they couldn't really sell in the store, and that's how they get it. The same type of thing exists with olives. There's tiny little olives, and then there's larger olives.
Yeah.
That's basically the way it works. There is a machlokas about whether a kezias is half an egg or a kezias is a third of an egg. That's a machlokas. For dinim d'oraisa, a machmir that kezias is half an egg. By the way, an egg also varies in size. No, there's jumbo eggs. Jumbo eggs do not exist in nature. What bird? Chicken. Let's assume chickens, right? Ostrich eggs are much larger than chickens.
I was thinking like pigeon or dove or something.
Right, those are also smaller generally. Right. Most assume that we're talking about chicken eggs. Why? I'm not sure. I think some of you should say Betzis tarnigolas, which means chicken eggs. So,
are we talking about mass or surface area?
So it's volume. So now, okay, when I talk about volume, it goes like this. A matzah that weighs 1 ounce will displace 2 fluid ounces of liquid. We judge the kezias based on displacement. Remember high school with your graduated cylinders and like all those things that you hated? Right? So that's the way you measure your matzah.
Yeah.
Right? You do displacement volume. Basically, people ask me sometimes, some people have difficulty eating matzah. People might have, they might have celiac or some various conditions that digesting matzah is very hard. So some people, in these cases, they'll go and they'll eat oat matzah. Oat matzah is questionable whether you're yotzei the mitzvah because oats might not be one of the chameshes minei dagon. All five forms of grain, the Yerushalmi tells me, are versions of barley and wheat. Oats are completely a different species than barley and wheat. Hence, I know the Latin names if it helps you, but it's completely different. So it's questionable whether oats and spelt are the chameshes minei dagon. What I recommend... So what do you do? What do you do if you have like celiac disease? How much matzah do you eat? What do you do? So I'm not convinced that oat matzah is a great suggestion. If you have no alternative, you eat matzah. But I'm not convinced it's a great suggestion. A certain person who, one of my rabbis called an Erzatz Talmud Chacham, the fellow has like interesting ideas. So he says, the Mishnayos in Challah speak about a rule called Gerira, which is that if you mix rice together with some wheat flour, so it will, the whole thing becomes halakhically wheat. And therefore, what you could do is you could have like 1/10 of wheat, one part wheat, and 9 parts rice, and you could get your kezias that way, and therefore it won't be a problem. Here's the problem. We don't eat rice on Pesach. Okay, so we don't eat rice on Pesach, have kidneys. But you know what? To be Mekayim in the midst of matzah, we'll forget kidneys. That's not a big deal. But I have a bigger problem. The rice in America is actually chametz. Much of the rice in America is actually chametz. The rice in America is enriched. And it's enriched to give you some additional minerals that they don't have in normal rice. And the way they enrich it is that they take a derivative of wheat and they enrich the rice. The Frum Sfaradim, who are going to eat rice on Pesach, know that you have to get rice from particular companies and it's not enriched. It's like a whole Torah. If you want to speak to people in like Sfaradi communities in Brooklyn, they'll give you a whole Torah. This actually is very relevant if you have little babies and you want to give them rice. So there's like different stages of what babies eat. You go from rice to oatmeal, etc., right? You have to be very careful because some of the rice is actually enriched. So I don't like that suggestion of the rice with the rice mixed with the wheat.
It also, seems if it had like a little wheat in there, like
that might also depending on how bad your celiac is, right? Some people say that they're celiac; it's not as bad. There's a whole range of how gluten intolerant one can be. Now, if someone is not completely gluten intolerant, right, it would seem to me that instead of using this razzle-dazzle idea of rice with whatever, eat a very small share of matzah. How large is a kezias? A kezias is, are you ready? 1/10 of a machine matzah.
Or of a hand matzah?
1/15 of a hand matzah. Again, hand matzahs are hard to calibrate. Depends how thick they are, whatever. Generally, it's 1/10 of a machine, 1/15 of a hand.
Okay, but
that is very little. Okay? It's basically a piece yay big. That is a real kezias.
Okay.
If you want to eat 2 kezasim, now again, that is the kula dikshir. The chumra shir for how large 2 kezasim of matzah is 2/3 of a machine matzah. That's it! 2/3 of a machine matzah! I've seen people sitting at a Pesach Seder who take the matzah and they fill up like a big garbage bag. That's not the way you eat the matzah! There was a guy who read an article a few years ago, Yair Hafen, wrote an article in the Five Towns Jewish Times, about the correct way to eat matzah. The Trumas Hadesh and says that you're supposed to swallow both kezesim at the same time, so what you should do is you should become a cow. Right, you know how cows chew their cud? You put it on your mouth, you chew, you make a gigantic ball, but it's going to be like the size like a softball, and then you swallow it one time. If you survive, right? I don't know if you're going to survive that. Like, 2 kezesim, 2 chazanish kezesim, it's going to be mad to swallow that scene. It's absolutely impossible. It seems to me that what you should do is take 2 small kezesim of matzah, right? Again, how small you want to go, let's say 1/3 of a machine matzah, that's a normal size. So you have 2 of those, that's 2/3. That will certainly equal 1 large kezias. And you're neyotze, you're fine, don't make yourself nuts. Judaism, Leil HaSeder, there's a mitzvah, you're supposed to be happy. There's Simchas Yontif. You're not going to be happy if you do it that way. Drink good wine, eat matzah like a normal person. That's the way we do it. Okay, next. There is a discussion, let's say someone forgot to make hamotzi, or you yotze the mitzvah of eating matzah, maybe it's a mitzvah bava aveira, because the Gemara says that if you eat food without making a bracha, so it's like you're stealing it. If I would steal your matzah, I don't get the mitzvah. And then Shlomo Kluger says you're not yotze the mitzvah if you don't make the bracha of hamotzi. Make sure you make the bracha of hamotzi. Nonetheless, most would disagree with Shlomo Kluger anyway, and say that you get the mitzvah. We have to fulfill the mitzvah of eating matzah before chatzos. Chatzos is usually assumed to be the halfway point between shkia, between sunset and sunrise in the morning. But Shlomo Zalman Arbach has a fiddish that chatzos for the Seder is a little bit earlier. And you take the halfway point between shkia and between alos hashachar, which is, let's say, 72 minutes before sunrise. And the halfway point between that makes the chatzos a little bit earlier. okay, that's not such a big deal. This year, because of daylight savings time, it's somewhat easier to get to Chatzos, so the Seder is going to be starting later. It's like a trade-off, no? Okay, you have to eat matzah, and then you eat maror, right? Motzi matzah, then comes maror. Maror is a question, what maror is. There are Mishnah in Psachim tells us there are five species of maror. Probably maror at the time of the Mishnah, Yehuda Felix points out, was some sort of wild lettuce, which is actually quite bitter. That's probably the maror. All forms of lettuce are probably kosher for maror. There's other things that are also kosher for maror. Some of them have issues with bugs, check it for bugs, whatever it is. Horseradish is probably not maror. Horseradish is not bitter, it is sharp.
Right.
Right?
It tastes so good with the charoset.
Okay, so again, so you want to mix with the charoset, be my guest, we'll talk about this in a second. But horseradish is probably not maror. I remember as a kid, my father would take a chunk of horseradish and like bite into it. Then we'd watch him, my sister and I would be sitting there watching his face get redder and redder and redder. Then he would start to cry. Then he'd like finish, and we're looking at him, we're like, wait, he's going to die. And he's like, so good. I'm like, how's that good? What is that? That's the way traditional Jews would eat maror. They would.
Yeah.
It's very questionable whether horseradish counts as maror. By the way, horseradish is interesting. How do they get the name horseradish? Because horseradish in German is Meerrettich. And some idiot who spoke English translated Meerrettich as mare, M-A-R-E, and then it became horseradish. Right? It makes absolutely no sense. Like, this stuff has nothing to do with a horse. Now, there is a few articles that horseradish is not considered maror halachically. What I would recommend is, if you're very traditional and you want to eat horseradish, so be my guest, eat horseradish, but also eat lettuce. Like, generally speaking, it's not so hard to eat a kazayis of lettuce. It's not that difficult. Like, 1.5 leaves of lettuce, like, or even less, maybe, depending how big the leaf is. It's not such a big deal. Eat lettuce. If you want to eat horseradish also. Don't mix them together. Because if you mix them together, what's going to happen is that the sharpness of the horseradish, which is probably not maror, will come and will remove the taste of the maror. You have to taste the maror. The Gemara says that bala matzah yatza, bala maror lo yatza. You don't get the mitzvah if you just swallow the maror. You have to taste it. And if I have the sharp horseradish, that will be mevatel the taste of the real maror, which is the lettuce. So don't mix it together. That's the din of maror.
Do you need a
seiba
for maror?
What? So maror we don't do with haseba. We basically do haseba with everything else besides maror. We do haseba. Whether you do haseba by karpas or not, there are two opinions. We do haseba by matzah. We do haseba by korech. We do haseba by afikomen. During Shulchan Aruch, it's a machlokus between the Rambam and the Rosh, whether you should be made of the entire Seuda. Generally speaking, we try to do it, although it is difficult. You can try to do haseba when you're eating your chicken soup, you're going to ruin the Thai. Right? So, okay. Hi, Ben. How are you?
Hey. Does it matter what type of lettuce you use? We use horseradish.
So, what type of lettuce you use? Okay. I mean, the traditional approach is to use romaine lettuce. Iceberg lettuce is also good. Basically, any lettuce is good. All these lettuces are like great-grandchildren and cousins of that original wild lettuce. So halakhically, they're considered related to the real lettuce. You want to use endives. Endives are okay.
The problem with that is that a lot of lettuce doesn't become bitter.
So again, the Yerushalmi writes
that the idea of maror is that it tastes sweet now. If you would leave it in the ground long enough, it would become bitter. I think that's true by all lettuces.
Yeah, but if you look at scientifically,
I don't know.
If you look at scientifically, the only one that becomes bitter, is romaine.
Interesting. I don't know. Rabbi Aaron Cutler used to eat iceberg lettuce at the Seder.
I'll go with what.
Don't know. Okay, now. If a person has, okay, so that's maror, then comes korech. So korech is that we have the matzah and the maror together to be zeichar l'mikdash kehillah. The Mishnah Berurah and the Bir Halacha recommends not to say zeichar l'mikdash kehillah. Don't see that paragraph because it's going to be a hefsek. When I make my bracha matzah, I have in mind it's going to go on that korech. I make my bracha maror, I have in mind it's going to go on the korech. I shouldn't talk in between, so therefore don't say zeichar l'mikdash kehillah. Chacham Avadi Yosef, Zecharon Lebracha, says that no, even according to Hillel, the ideal is to eat the matzah and maror together. But if I ate them separately, I got in the mitzvah. So if I got in the mitzvah, the bracha was already chal, so therefore I'm allowed to talk in between, so therefore I'm allowed to say the Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel. I think the standard approach is to say Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel against the Mishnah Berurah. Shlomo Zalman was very firm. He used to say the Zecher LeMikdash Kehillel after he ate the korech. Okay, so next week, Mir Tzah Hashem, will try to finish off the Seder. I happen to love the end of the Seder. My family doesn't let me get into it because they're all tired. So next week, you're going to be my guinea pigs. And all the stuff I don't get to say at the end of the Seder because my kids don't let me, I'll try to say next week.